Welcome to Occult the Personality Podcast. Joining us is Christopher Moores of creativecosmos.org. Christopher, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be here. Glad to be talking to your audience. I've been following your website for the last few months anyway, maybe 6 months, and I've enjoyed the material, and I'm glad to be speaking to your audience today.
Oh, we appreciate it immensely. And just to reiterate, your website is creativecosmos.org, and people can find a lot of links and information there about different things.
Oh, yeah, that's part of the reason I got it going all those years ago, just to collect all the, you know, all kinds of metaphysical links and the alternative news sites and sources for, you know, self-expansion, soul growth. I have a soul school there. I have a forum where we collect all kinds of things. I have sites to links. Today I just put up a link, of course, to your site, Greg, Cult of Personality. I've had a link on my site for quite a while now. And I also just did something. I wanted to get it done in time for this show. I finally have available the book of mine, Pearly Gates Press, of where I've put all three volumes. I had originally three volumes of it that were smaller, but I now have them all available in one big book called Pearly Gates Press. So if you want to check that out too, that's a nice resource of information on the metaphysical and astral plane and how it works and what goes on there. And we'll be definitely talking about some of that today.
Excellent. Yeah, that looks fascinating. I have to check that out. So that's great. I want to appreciate your support. And I've been following your work ever since I heard you on Red Ice Radio. I don't know how long ago it was, but a few months or maybe even a year or so ago. But for people who aren't familiar with you or in your work, if you wouldn't mind sort of giving us a description of what it was that began you on your journey and a sort of a description of how you got to where you are now.
Sure. You know, I'm coming from a musical background, so the basis is music. You know, I grew up being creative. I'm from a musical family. My dad's a clarinet player. My grandfather was a bagpiper, and I have uncles that play, and we have and so it's a musical atmosphere, which kind of sets the stage, you know, for in the longer run to be open to these kind of things, you know, because I ended up going through, I'm a trumpet player by trade. Initially, that's what I went to school for. So I went to school and studied music and learned all about Western art culture, you know, the different time periods, Renaissance, Baroque, classical, romantic, and moving towards the present, and all the idiosyncrasies of the eras and all of the artists and musicians and, you know, even the architecture. And, you know, so I studied all that stuff and got a really good basis in art, music, and literature. And then I also had very good teachers. You know, one thing about studying a musical instrument, and what you do is you study with a master of the instrument. You study with a great player. And, you know, I had my first teacher, Dr. Paul Wilworth at Central Michigan University. He instilled in me a sense of purpose, you know, a sense of kind of searching or of excellence or of really looking at the details or, you know, doing a fine job on everything, or a sense of personal integrity, you know. And then I went on to work on my master's degree, and, you know, I studied with the trumpet player there, who's still a good friend of mine, Rich Illman. And, you know, he taught me to have no fear and to, you know, to be strong and kind of, you know, and this is initially related to performance, for trumpet performance, to, you know, totally go for things, you know, to take the opportunity, you know. But still at this point, I hadn't opened up to realize that I was on a major spiritual search. You know, when I look back on it, all through my younger days or throughout my life, I had a feeling that I was called. I mean, when you talk about the calling, so to speak, I had the call from the beginning. You know, I felt somehow I was connected to God, not in a distant way, but in a very close way, like a personal way, that I had a link, and I knew someday something was going to happen, but I had no idea what that was because I had no frame of reference for it at the time. I just was a little guy in a small town, you know, just with only a few things I was exposed to. So I had no idea. So it was a kind of a restlessness. And then I went to Urbana, Illinois, which is where I live now. I had moved away for a while, but I moved to Urbana, Illinois and started teaching and also going to school for doctorate at University of Illinois. And I was still kind of on the same course. I was very ambition, you know, oriented. I was going to get this degree, this job, that job, on and on and on, you know, intenseness, very trapped in the mind still at this point. You know, I still had good intentions and goals, but I was, there's something inside me that wasn't being met. And as time went on, right around this crucial period, I don't know, was I 23, 24, maybe even pushing 25, somewhere in that ballpark, maybe 24, right, where I'm talking about now. And I started feeling like something was wrong. Like I had great success. I was playing in orchestras and teaching students and teaching colleges and doing all sorts of things that most people would look at and say, hey, man, that's great. And in a way, it was great. But yet something in me, here I was achieving the success that I had been seeking and still didn't feel at peace or like I was fully fulfilled. And it was right around this time I came across two different people that were very influential in my life. One was Ray Sasaki, who is a trumpet teacher. He was at the University of Illinois, but now he's at Texas. But he comes from a Zen perspective. His grandfather is from Japan and is a Zen man. And all through his life, when growing up, he would spend much time with his grandfather and absorb the Zen atmosphere and what that was all about. And so he started teaching me about getting out of the way and getting out of the way of the ego as well. You know, not to always be so self-centered, you know, basically allowing for nature and for opening the door to inspiration when inspiration would come rather than trying to preconceive and force some kind of thinking based on your own closed set of parameters, which is nothing more than a replication of that which you've been exposed to before. And I also started spending time with the head of the jazz department at the University of Illinois, who's still one of my closest friends to this day, Dr. Tom Wirtle, also known as Shabda Noir. And maybe you've heard him on one of those Red Ice shows. He came on with me on Henrik's program a few times. And he was a sannyasin of Osho Rajneesh. And had spent time with him in India and later in America. And Osho basically is an Eastern guru who talked on many different things, all kinds of traditions. And really this, when I started hanging out with Shabda and started reading the Osho books, then the door was thrown wide open. And I realized kind of what was going on. You know, there's actually a singular moment around this time where Shabda, myself, and a bunch of close friends, all of whom were learning these spiritual ways and supporting each other and hugging each other and loving each other, we went up kind of on this retreat to northern Michigan, the Upper Peninsula, middle of the woods. We had a camp out, and it was just the stars were brilliant. There was not another person around. We were up all night, and there was just one moment in the middle of the night where I was standing out with Shabda on the street just looking at the stars, and you know, he grabbed me and gave me a big hug just from being so full of life and joy at being alive. And something in me just released, and I started bawling, just crying, just sobbing completely. My whole body was just like, oh, and it was like all this pent up frustration and pain throughout my life just comes pouring out. And but then it becomes transformed into tears of joy. In a new awareness dawned on me of life and the gift of life and the gratitude within me for having the opportunity to be here. I was self-aware. I saw for myself what life was and the gift of my life, and I felt the lotus blossom within me. And ever since, I've been connected to the universe, to the source, and it's been a matter of kind of aligning the dude in the physical body with that greater truth and nature of who I am. Mm.
It's an amazing story, yeah.
So that's how the story begins. So that's how I came to find that I was on the path. Mm-hmm.
That's great, yeah. So what we wanted to talk about today in general terms was the sort of the difficulties that one encounters on that path, because it's not an easy path, to be certain. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, what are some of the main ones? I know, you know, we can think of, you know, going along this this journey, you know, it's difficult in different ways. You know, it could be the loneliness for some people, or for others it can be you know, having to, you know, discard certain aspects of their life. Yeah. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, especially that last thing that you say. Once you kind of awaken to this new reality, I mean, one of the aspects about it is you start getting a little more space from the mind, and you do have to reevaluate yourself. And you know, I basically went through the process of learning all over again, just about everything. What do I actually think about this? You know, because one of the first things you awaken to is that a lot of what you think or what you've been doing has been put into you from the outside somehow. You know, it could be that you learned it from school, or you learned it from a religion class, or your family had a certain set of values, or in just picking to hang around with friends, or television, or movie, or media, any kind of media. And, you know, we're bombarded with tons of external impulses, which then go inside of us. And right from the beginning, we're born immersed in this. And then we never live outside of it. And so we ourselves at some point have to recognize this and then step back consciously from this field of inculcation. Because any message is basically, you know, trying to – it can be an influence. And one of the things is it can even be a seemingly good influence, you know, like something we normally consider, you know, good. Don't do that. Do this. You know, something that kind of makes sense. But until we discover it for ourselves, it doesn't become a natural thing. You know, the real issue at hand is obligating yourself – to do something because of an external rule or expectation. Well, then you're setting up tension. That's why so many people have so much stress that they carry with them all the time and don't feel like they can just relax and release and be quiet and at rest, because these expectations are constantly driving them. And see, when you have all these things inside you, what it does is it makes your mind crank really fast. Like, I'm thinking of this, I gotta take care of this, did I do this, did I do that, I gotta do this, on and on, and then even longer, what am I gonna do in 3 years, or how am I gonna pay this bill, or am I ever gonna find the girl of my dreams, or, you know, just anything that your mind can just too, it creates this big kind of a barrier, like, because it occupies all of our attention. And so we have to, that's why the Buddhists say, talk about non-doing and non-attachment, because you want, that's that stepping back, and you start watching these things, and you don't act any longer, or you don't react. You know, somebody says something that then triggers a response within you. Well, instead of just going along with it like you usually do, you've got to watch it. And then you see, oh my, this, you know, the first time you don't act on it, and then you see from a distance what that thing was causing you to do. You know, it might have caused you to get mad at someone and cause a fight, and then, which then in turn causes your own stress, and for you to see, feel bad about yourself, whether you know it or not. You know, and so then when this thing comes around and you no longer go for the ride, well, what, in these early stages, there's going to be pain to be dealt with, because one, it's going to be happy that you didn't do that act this time, but then suddenly you realize what you have been doing as well as the other side, and you open up to it, to the empathy of what you've been putting out there, you know, how you've made other people feel maybe with that, and you know, there's a pain there. It hurts to realize that you've been kicking these things out that have been hurting other people and yourself. But that's where you have to have this thing. What I did that helped me a lot was I was just going to be like, okay, I see what's going on. I'm going to admit it. If I see anything I'm doing wrong, I'm going to admit it. Yeah, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I'm working on it, and move on. Because the worst thing to do is to deny it, to avoid it, to try to run away from it, to try to occupy yourself with it. You know, and that's what I think people do. And that's one of the first and early difficulties in the unraveling process.
Yeah, that is a tough one. You're right. But ultimately, you know, sort of admitting it is the best way, because you're being authentic not only with yourself but with everybody else. And most of the time people can understand, because, you know, if you're not trying to be perfect, you know, you're being human. Everyone knows we all make mistakes all the time. So, you know, as people are sort of coming to those realizations where they start stepping back and becoming more of the observer instead of the actor or the participant in these dramas that the ego likes to play out, it sort of gives people a much wider perspective, not only on themselves, right? It shows you sort of a lot of sort of what motivates other people and why they do what they do at different times as well.
Sure. The mind mechanism, you know, since a lot of those external forces are the same that are working on us, that are working on other people, and the way the mind works tends to be the same. For sure, the more you master your own mind, the more you have insight into other people and how their mind works. For sure, you know, and like you said, you start opening to another world. Well, that is a dramatic difference from being, you know, this is one thing I like to say is, you know, for a while, for a period of time, we look at ourselves just in the small sense of the person in the body from age zero to, like myself, 33, going on 34, and just the experiences that I've had, the people I've been around, the few relations I've had, this city, that city, just a small subset of what we are in the body. But then you move to, from that, basically, to everything, anything, when you can be open and the observer, or another way they put that observing state is like a mirror. You just reflect everything. And the amount that you can soak up is simply the amount that you can reflect. You know, you don't have to. This is why eventually you stop turning things into a belief or into like creeds or dogmas or systems of thought, because you don't need a system of thought when you have every system of thought at your disposal freely to use per circumstance at any given time. You know, so things open up and they magnify and they expand exponentially. And you know, so that happens on a macro way of where we start seeing our own personal role in the universe. We start seeing that, you know, we're in a creative cosmos of planets and stars and creatures, and this life runs through all of us. You know, that's why I like the Om vibration, like to speak of the Om, you know, even as a musician as well. You know, it gets you right to the basic essence, that vibration which sustains all of existence. And if you and I both tune into that vibration and turn over to that vibration, there's no longer any space between us. And in that way, you know me and I know you, because we both know the truth behind it all.
Yeah, that's a beautiful idea. And as we sort of, you know, open up to these things, open up to this sort of higher states of consciousness, could you talk a little bit about some of the the benefits of it, you know, the things you experience, as well as some of the not so good things?
Yeah. I mean, one thing, you start developing psychic abilities almost right away when you begin meditation, because it's not that you never had them before. It's like I said earlier, you're occupied. If you're always occupied with looking outside and thinking about outside, because, you know, that if you take all those expectation and external inputs and they're turning around in your mind, well, you're still thinking of the outside, and it basically crowds out your ability to perceive anything else. And also there's kind of a thing that's prevailing, I don't know if it's prevailing, but it's out there, of people being really skeptical about it. I think it's getting better, but still there are many people that are not, they might doubt themselves or doubt that could happen, or they're close to that realm of possibility. You know, so the first thing, you just got to open up to things as being possible. Okay, now as we take these things in our mind that churn and unravel them, you realize, oh, this one I picked up from here, and this one I picked up from there, and you pull, kind of strip those off you that way, because when you realize you got it from somewhere else, it might have been useful as a guide for a time, but it isn't your essential nature, because you don't need any external imposition or superstructure or anything like that. Your nature will reveal itself from the inside perfectly as it is. So you clear these things away and learn again from the inside. So the first thing is unraveling those external inputs so that you have space to perceive now the messages from the inside. And they aren't the same. They aren't the same. They happen in a different realm. This is where my study of Zen was so helpful, because I just learned to be at rest, to wait, to be receptive, and then when something came up in me, I didn't doubt it. I didn't push it down. I listened to it and started. And you have to nurture this process. You know, there's a thing about it where you almost have to, like be a gardener of your own spirit in a way. You know, it's just a little sprout. It's really delicate. You know, it's easy for someone to trample on it, crush it down, you know. And so you have to take care with it and also be somewhat protective of it, that, you know, I stand by what I perceive in the world, and not shy away from it or deny it or obscure it or say it's something else. So that's a difficulty in the early spiritual life, is getting that strength to stand behind what you start perceiving, which is different than what many other people are perceiving. And they may not go along with it. They may not believe it. They may be skeptical. They may find it offensive even. You know, I've had all these reactions just because it's different. A lot of people aren't familiar with it or exposed to it. It's new, and so people get scared. And then the other people who are locked into their own beliefs or their own traditions and think that that is the only way, well, if you come along and say you're experiencing something different, that's a threat to them. And they're going to maybe, you know, be against it. And you never want them to be against it. You're just doing your own thing. But that is their reaction because they haven't learned to have that space and that observer and that peace because they're rejecting so much of existence by closing their mind to only one subset of possibilities.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, it seems that people, you know, who have attained a certain level of consciousness, or conscious awareness that you're talking about, seem to get beyond these dogmas, these beliefs, this sort of duality of thought that the world sort of is set up in, right? You've got good and bad, or good and evil, and, you know, if it's not good, which is my way, it must be evil.
Yeah. Well, this is also why an examination of history is really helpful on the spiritual path. You know, if you read all of world history and see that, well, in Egypt at such and such a time, they all believe this way. And Rome at such and such a time, they all believe this way. Well, over here at this time, well, they have completely different beliefs. And then you see how those threads go through history, how, you know, there's decisions made by people to trim this out, cut this out, you know, largely by politically oriented rulers, you know, what ends up getting siphoned in out and what ends up existing, but yet there's often an underground and blah, blah, blah. There's all these threads that weave in and out, but just seeing those threads, you know that you're not going to take a snapshot of one time and place and say that what these people believe applies universally. And there's absolutely no need to, because we can see all of it. And they're all, you know, the essence and the truth of all of it points to the same thing, that source which connects us all in life, in light, in spirit, you know. And it's just ways that the mind has processed it through the years, and then that process of then me telling you and you telling someone else and them telling someone else, and it changes. And, you know, maybe some of these become myths, which do have like an archetypal benefit. They represent a certain kind of a truth. But again, everything we can gain from or benefit from, but we also, if we hold on to it, then it becomes a bondage to our own natural flow, which is the highest truth beyond it all.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think also, you know, in studying history and the way you talk about, we can see the way that these divisions are promoted, by people who want to be divided or want to see others divided, sort of keep people from attaining that state where, you know, maybe they don't care so much about commerce and consumption and the political scene, and focused more on spirituality and sort of raising that their own consciousness to another level entirely.
Yeah, that's why some of these things that are seemingly just kind of aren't that bad, but underneath it all, they have a darker quality. You know, if somebody is trying to convince you of a dogma, they are in fact trying to keep you from that natural process of awakening, whether they know it or not. And that's a really harmful thing, you know, to try to pack someone's soul into a small set of beliefs. It just doesn't work. And, it, you know, I do think that slowly the idea, that concept is spreading out into the populace, and even people who didn't quite think of that before, and maybe people you wouldn't have thought would open up to it. Well, you know, in life, many things happen, and people do change. People do open up to new ideas, and, you know, there is, it's an evolution. I think what you're describing there is, you know, the people who are wanting to come together and have this, have open acknowledgement, I guess, of consciousness and the living universe. And then the people who are spreading the division, they're like the past. That's like the old way almost. And then an evolution now doesn't take place in form, in physical form, because as a human body, we're pretty much ideal for the planet Earth at this point. We don't need the body to grow a third arm or, you know, six toes or anything like that. We're perfectly created, and then now the evolution goes on to higher dimensions of where, this is why I say you got to be open to that possibility. You got to accept that life is bigger than yourself, you know, that there is a greater plan at play, that there's a natural law or Tao behind it all. And you don't have to believe that, because for one, you can feel that for yourself. You can see it all over the place in the creations of the earth and the universe and the order and systems, all of which are like one magnificent cosmic work of art.
That is for sure. I think that when people do open themselves up to this and start to see it around them manifested, it's nothing short of completely awe-inspiring. But at the same time, I think it can be a bit, you know, overly awe-inspiring in some respects, to the point where it can be somewhat frightening.
A little bit.
So what do you say to someone who is, you know, in that position where they've sort of opened themselves up to this, they've acknowledged the, you know, magnificence and incredible beauty of the universe and creation, and they're sort of standing at the edge of the abyss, you know, trying not to like fully comprehend it, because it would just be, you know, too much to take for some reason.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's a lot. It's a lot to take. You know, it scared the hell out of me many times. And, you know, there's no guarantee that you're not going to feel certain things like that. You know, even being pretty awakened, you still have the human qualities, you know, the human feelings, human emotions. So you end up existing on many levels. You're in the body doing human things, but you're also simultaneously experiencing the astral, and then also experiencing like your interconnectedness with everything, and also experiencing like a space beyond it all, peace beyond it all, and all at once you're living in all those realms. You know, that's one of the things that's a little tricky about sorting the stuff in your subconscious out, is that it doesn't all come just from one place. It comes from many different places and is happening in many different realms. Some of it might affect the emotions, which then stir the mind. You know, some of it might be a wound from your past that you have to go and recover and heal and awaken. And, you know, it really isn't for the faint of heart, you know. It is a completely thrilling, but also can be terrifying, because what you do is you let go. You let go of security, the whole idea of security, because that essentially is the ego's realm. That's what the ego says, is I'm going to fix up this wall, or I'm going to fix up this set of rules, and things are going to be done this way here on out. And then it gets a feeling of complacency, are also like it allows them to forget that knife edge of life and the thrillingness. It kind of is like a auto hypnosis in a way. You do the same things, and eventually it kind of gets you into a numb little groove there, and then you feel like you're safe. But that is like a self-delusion, because the reality of life doesn't change. You know, that's why when death comes somewhere close to us, we're reminded very vividly of this fact that in 1 second it could all go away. So there's different aspects to it. You know, one, there's an urgency for it. You know, while you're here, you have the opportunity to become awakened to the truth of who you are and transcend the whole experience, you know, so that you will know yourself even beyond one life. You know, this is something else that happens, too, as you start, when you get unravel the things from this life, and that's pretty much clear. You'll still get things bubbling up for years and years, little things, but, you know, pretty much you can get it pretty clean, and then you start seeing things from past lives start bubbling up. And I went through periods of time where when those started coming up, I almost relived them. You know, there was a life of mine where I was a Knights Templar. And when I was uncovering that and recovering the spiritual knowledge I had in that life, you know, if I would have been doubting that, because that's kind of an off-the-wall thing, you know, to say, or just that's what I'm doing right now is reassimilating this past life with all these archetypal imageries and late knowledge. But that is what I was doing. And I had removed that doubt mechanism, so I didn't doubt it. I didn't doubt what was coming up in me. And so I followed it through. That was also part of the whole point of creative cosmos, is by being creative, by expressing yourself, you're following these things through. You know, some of what I did in the earliest days, before I even discovered the creative cosmos idea in myself, I drew a whole bunch. You know, I suddenly, when I was rediscovering what it was I was all about, starting from the beginning, looking at what I naturally wanted to do, I found that I really enjoyed drawing. And so I drew like hundreds of pictures. But then when I went through those pictures, it was like a roadmap to my own subconscious almost. It showed me what was going on. At times there were high moments of inspiration, and at other times there was a hidden pain. But it no longer was inside poisoning me. It was now outside, and I could see it, and it was seeing the light of day, and it was receiving the healing of existence, because now it was no longer hidden. You know, so all these pains that we have, we can't hide them. We have to bring them out to the light, to the love of the universe, of all things, disperse it into existence, give it back to existence, and it will dissipate, and you will recover those energies, and then they'll be restored to their natural flow. So your aura will get brighter, your chakras will be more balance, and you'll feel your will get stronger and stronger, and you'll have more of ability to create and to manifest that which you come up with yourself, your own dream.
Fascinating. Now, I'm curious about how when you talk about these the past lives and these yeah. sort of is it memories or sort of images, maybe, or feelings, emotions that come up, you know, because we can find a lot of information out there about sort of the past life phenomenon or whatever you want to call it, but it's not clear to me that anybody really can describe sort of the mechanics behind how it works so much, but I'm curious more in terms of the way these things sort of manifest. Is it just kind of in everyday sort of conscious moments, or is it in certain settings, or you know, how did you experience it in your life?
Yeah. Well, one person who I believe describes it really well, that rung really true with me, is Paramahansa Yogananda. He goes into certain, you know, he has very scientific and deep explanations about a lot of metaphysical things. And some of what he said led me to discover things on my own. You know, one thing is you got to be at first a little bit of a detective. You know, now if I'm by somebody, like I could be around a friend, I do this all the time with my friends, I'll suddenly be like, bam, I know this about you, their past life. Like it'll just dawn on me now because I've worked through the process to the point where I can just jump there now. But initially it's like detective work. Like, let's say, you know, somebody who's really drawn to the Civil War, for instance, you know, and they even so far as to put up relics of that time period in their house or pictures, you know, photos from that time, or they like to read novels about that. Well, that might be a clue that they had past life in Civil War somewhere, you know, or also, let's see. Yeah, you could prefer, people have had that when they go to a place, they feel familiar with it. You know, it's all in just not doubting those things we sense, because people will feel those connections to a place or a certain time period, or also, like, say something like, this is something that Sylvia Brown talks about a lot. And I sometimes watch her on Montel on Wednesday. I always like to keep up on what the other psychics I like are saying and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she's really pretty good resource on how the past lives work, too. She says a lot of good stuff. But, you know, if you have a fear of something, I have a fear of water, and don't want to go in water. Well, and there's no reason in your life right now to explain why you're afraid of water. Well, the cycle probably goes back, you know. So something that might seem uncaused, something that you don't have a reason in this life to explain, but yet it presents itself very strongly, like a thing, or you can look back to your own early days and look at some of the things you were interested in then. Like myself, in my early days, I was very interested in Greek myths and constellations. Mm-hmm. And I knew all the 88 constellations and read every single myth there was and knew the whole cosmology intimately. And this is like when I was like 6 or something, you know, and there's really no reason for that. You know, sure, you could just have a passing interest, whatever, and get into it, so to speak, or something. But that, to me, is a clue, you know, that I had some kind of a Greek background, you know. And that begins the starting point, and then you can later actually connect to that. I'm trying to keep up with what's forming in my mind. Now, there's also dreams. My past life, some of them were revealed to me in dreams. Like, for instance, when I was pretty young, I had a dream that took place in my first grade playground. And I was just playing along, jumped off the swing, walked over to the bushes, opened the bushes up, and all of a sudden I saw a giant step pyramid. And now, I hadn't even seen those in books before. Yeah, I don't think. Maybe I had, but, you know, it hadn't had enough of an impression on me to be lodged in my subconscious just as part of this life that I would suddenly see this place. But I believe now that I was seeing a place I knew from past life. You know, so all over the place, we have clues. And everybody does. I can see it in other people too, you know. Like, I joke with my mother because she likes to help people a lot and is very compassionate and very empathetic and, you know, really likes to serve people and make sure that, like, the weak are taken care of or the hurt or, you know, just looking after the people who need it. And I tell her that she was a nun in a past life because she has those qualities. I can see those qualities. Or, you know, some people might be seafaring folk, and from life to life they'll work around the docks, around the boats, you know. Or, you know, there's you know, just tendencies. Nothing is uncaused. So if you trace cause and effects back and open the door to it going beyond this life, then many of these things will reveal themselves. And again, it's a kind of an intricate landscape, which is why it's important not to hold on to anything. You've got to, all you need to do is see it, and then it will always be a part of you. You don't need to think about it or come up with an explanation for it, because there'll be bits and pieces. It won't come as just a single storyline. You'll get a bit here, you'll get a bit there. You'll suddenly realize this, you know. But then when you get kind of get the knack of how to retrieve it, then it comes quicker, it comes easier. And to the point of what I was saying, when I was like recovering that life as a knight, I could even feel it in my heart, like this sense of valor and duty, and I bought a couple swords, and I bought some rings and some just different things symbolic of that. I really wore it. I would let it come, and I let it kind of come back into me. And so for a couple months, that was like a focus, you know. And they can come in waves. You almost imagine the person you are in this life. Well, the first body outside of the physical body, you've got an etheric body. Now imagine if you had 10 other etheric bodies. And, okay, you got your current etheric body and your past etheric body. Now they're going to suddenly blend together. So you've got to be able to let it all come in and pass through. You know, you don't suddenly then. So it's the key is to not have a closed definition of who you are, and to keep that awareness and that. That's why people have a heart, don't really usually get into this, because they just think of themselves in this life and how it relates to the world. But if you get to that point of reflecting and opening up to accepting these things back, you can do it. It's just the ability to kind of bear it, to bear with your own comprehension that you are many people, and to simultaneously have all that experience from all those lives, and to still be free and untouched and able to be spontaneously new and lively in this moment.
Interesting. So, yeah, this is fascinating stuff. I'm curious, so for people who are sort of just starting out on this path, in the, you know, the few minutes we have remaining, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that you'd recommend that people do or learn about, you know, in order to sort of get to the places, you know, where they can access these memories or sort of get beyond the day-to-day things that sort of drag them down, or that they want to get beyond?
Yeah, well, the first thing is to have the ability to relax and let go. All the things that seem to be pressing and seem to be the, you know, so important and that you can't forget about or whatever, you need to be able to drop everything and have peace, to just rest and be still. Because, I mean, that is the key. That is like the golden gateway. If you can be still, all things are possible. And it sounds like a simple thing, but it's something that you may have to practice. You know, you may try to sit still and just be at first, and you can't do it. You gotta get up and turn on TV, or you gotta get up and take a walk, or pace around, or whatever, but you need these times of where you just stop. Just completely stop. And then that will shake loose. That will start working through your subconscious and shaking things loose. And then as they shake loose, like I said, be honest about it and let these things of which you might keep down see the light of day. See them for yourself. Accept these qualities for yourself. Don't judge this part of yourself as wrong and this part as good and this. You need to be whole. You need every part of yourself, and anything that might seem bad is just a distortion of your energy, which you can transform and restore to a healthy part of the whole. And, you know, and I also say read a lot. Everybody I know who's been on the path and has learned these kind of things about themselves have read tons of books, you know, dozens, hundreds even, and because it's out there. I mean, that's another point of my website, creativecosmos.org, is I wanted to show it. Hey, it's out here. If you want it, you can do it. You know, it's not a secret anymore. It's not hidden anymore. It's out there and available. And there are many people that are facilitating bringing this information to the world as a whole. This is what you do. This is what our friend Henrik does. This is what I do. This is many people are feeling called to share this with the world. So, you know, look into it. Enjoy yourself. Keep it loose. And it'll happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the information being out there, just if you could sort of mention again about Pearly Gates Press.
Yeah, Pearly Gates Press is like a whole era of my writing, of where I basically describe the astral landscape as it reveals itself to me, you know, from all the entities that are around there. Some of what we talked about today, ways of opening up to this and that, how to, and also these triggers. You know, one thing I found reading through many books is certain things triggered truth in me. In other words, it didn't give me information that I then held, but it spoke to me in a way that I learned something about myself. And that's how I always know I'm on the right stuff, the right material. That's how I trust an author, or, you know, is because I don't have to remember and think about it and study or anything. But no, it speaks to me in such a way that just hearing those words will change how I see things. And so one thing I do in this book, Pearly Gates Press, too, is I just go over many, many different things just to expose the reader to these possibilities in hopes of maybe shaking loose something inside themselves. Because if they know these things are possible, then it opens the doorway for them to experience for themselves what my Zen finger is pointing to.
Exactly, yeah. Now, I have one other question for you too, and this is sort of goes is sort of what you were just talking about, being able to, you know, when you read things that trigger something in yourself, it's not some information that you have to sort of memorize and regurgitate. That you sort of it's that internal truth, and I think. This is something that people encounter, you know, as they get older along the way. This whole concept of being open to ideas and things, because, you know, when you get too attached to belief systems or dogmas or practices, or certain ways of doing things, and it sort of limits your ability to open up. Even though you may be sort of adhering to a system in hopes of, you know, enlightening yourself to some degree, it's kind of like finding a balance between, you know, the path that you're on and, you know, being too strict or too dogmatic about it.
Yeah, sure. For a little while, I was talking about this kind of hyper-morality that I noticed, you know, and, you know, all this collection of New Age writing, it's almost like it becomes a much more complex and intricate weaving of dogma if you don't watch out. You know, you know, that's why the key is always to remember that it comes down to yourself, you know, that it's all just a means to awaken the truth within yourself, and it all really happens in your walk through life, moment to moment. And all these things you should just use as tools to assist in your own exploration, but take the responsibility for yourself as an individual, because that is how you earn the heavenly rewards.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's thank you. Yeah, I think that's a great way to sort of wrap it up. So, Christopher Moores, I really appreciate it. Again, their website, creativecosmos.org. Do you have any final thoughts or any messages for the listeners?
Well, thank you for tuning in and your interest in this subject matter, because I believe if you heard this show, you were meant to hear it. That's how the universe works, and hopefully we were able to shake something loose in you and help you see the good in the world and all of what's available. It was really great joining you here today, Greg, and I hope we can do it again.
Absolutely. I definitely would like to speak with you sometime in the future. This is excellent. I really appreciate, again, your perspective. So,
well, thank you.
I know other people do as well, so it'll be good.
If anybody wants to drop me a line, my email address is cmours@creativecosmos.org. I'd always love to hear feedback and just get to know the people out there listening too, because I imagine you, or I think of you, or I'm speaking to you, the listeners out there, and my heart goes out to you every time I do this. So it's always great to hear back, because it helps complete the cycle of giving and is very nourishing and helps me to continue on with my work as well.
All the people that you see will be the children.